Schon wieder Bewerberflaute? Sie schalten Anzeige um Anzeige. Das nervt und ist doch viel zu teuer. Stopp! Raus aus der Recruiting-Spirale. Mit StepStone All Jobs bekommen Sie alle Anzeigen für ein Jahr in einem Paket zu einem fixen Preis. So sparen Sie bis zu 75% Kosten pro Bewerbung und sind jederzeit flexibel. Jetzt Termin vereinbaren auf stepstone.de/alljobs. StepStone. Einfach die richtigen Talente finden für alle Jobs.
Stu does America.
StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code Stu10. We'll save you 10%. If you're on YouTube, check it out. YouTube.com/Stu does America. There, you can, of course, like the show. You can drop a comment below. We really do appreciate when you do that. Click the bell for notifications and follow the program. Justin Haskins is going to be here in just a little bit to talk about Dark Future. His book, along with Glenn Beck, that is out, and the thing that we unfortunately face. But we start by doing the Biden whistleblowers. Yes, they are on display. We now know who some of them are. We've been hearing these people bubbling up below the surface for quite some time. And I don't know about you. If I were to give you the 1 to 10 scale question, 1 is nothing's going to change from all of this. And 10 is Joe Biden gets impeached and thrown in prison. I've been a 1 for a very long time on that scale because I just don't think anything good ever happens in the world. Maybe that's a little bit too far, but I just don't feel like people ever get held accountable for stuff like this. It just doesn't seem like it ever does happen. And that's a pessimistic view for sure, but I do think it's also been an accurate view most of the time. And lately, over the past couple of days, I don't know, I feel like I've moved to a 3 or a 4. And a good chunk of this is what I want to show you today. This is his testimony in front of Congress talking about this, these Biden whistleblowers. And these people are credible. They are people with really good resumes that seem to have no axe to grind with the Biden administration at all. In fact, maybe the opposite, as we'll show you here coming up. Now, of course, this is a Republican-led investigation, and the partisan angle of it is obvious to everyone. I mean, look, if this was the other way around, I don't know. Would Republicans care? Probably not. Would Democrats be saying the exact opposite of what they're saying now? Absolutely. 100% they would. This is, at some level, partisan. It is some level politics. But that's not really important at this point. The important thing is what actually happened. And the fact is that because one side of the aisle will not ask any questions, will not follow up on anything, does not care whatsoever to find out what actually occurred here, what crimes were committed, it is left up to Republicans to push these buttons. This is one of the reasons why you elected a Republican House. It's why America did, because it really is one of the few powers that Republicans get with this arrangement. They can't really stop any laws from going through, at least most of them. They can't. They can stop some of the laws, I should say, but they can't stop any of the executive orders. They can't stop any of the appointments. The laws themselves, they can usually stop unless Democrats bend the rules or pull a few Republicans over. But generally speaking, it's blocking the worst that the Biden administration can do. And also investigations. Those are the two things you get when you win just the House, right? Like, you're not going to be able to pass all the bills, all the tax cuts you want to pass and all the bills that you want to pass. You're not going to be able to do that with only the House. But you can get these investigations. And if you use them appropriately, not only does it benefit you politically, but it also benefits the country because people's corruption gets called out for once. And that is a rare thing in our system, unfortunately. Now, Jim Jordan was there. He was leading this group, and he kind of set the stage as to what we were supposed to be looking for here. This is yesterday afternoon.
You know whose story hasn't changed? These two guys. Their testimony has been consistent. Throughout, their testimony has been the same. And guess what? 2 days ago, an FBI agent confirmed their testimony. Who are you going to believe? The Justice Department? Can't get their story straight, changed 3 times in 33 days, or these two guys. The Justice Department that was found to censor Americans just 2 weeks ago from the federal court in Louisiana, the Justice Department that said moms and dads are terrorists, the Justice Department that said if you're a pro-life Catholic, you're an extremist, the Justice Department that can't get his story straight are these two guys. 10 years, over a decade of experience for each of them, the go-to guys in international tax evasion cases, the A-team when it comes to investigating these matters all over the world, they've done this, and who've been consistent throughout. I think I'll believe these guys. I think they're the ones telling the truth. And that is fundamentally what this comes down to. So God bless you guys for the work you've done, the courage you have, and for being here today, stepping forward because you care about equal treatment under the law. That's what's at stake, plain and simple.
Now, as Jim Jordan lays that out, he lays it out pretty well, the difference between these guys and some of these captured agencies that have been saying all sorts of ridiculous things lately. I will say, though, one minor disagreement I would have with Jim Jordan on that is, if he's right, if it what it comes down to is whether you trust these two guys versus these big, the FBI and, IRS and all these different places. If that's what it comes down to, then it's not going to go anywhere. It's a one, right? Like, these two guys might be the most credible people in the world. If all we have is the trust and the word of these two guys, it's not going to go anywhere. We can all hope that it will, but it probably won't. What's interesting to note, though, is there's much, much more than just trusting these two guys. But let's go down the road here for a second of just trusting these two guys. Are these guys credible? Are these, is this essentially a Republican operative who happens to have a job at the IRS and wants to call out the Biden administration? That could easily be possible. Well, Shapley was one of the two whistleblowers, and he was pretty clear that, this isn't benefiting me at all.
There's no benefit for me blowing the whistle on this case, absolutely none. I have no book deal, and the only money that goes into my bank account every 2 weeks is from my employment for the federal government.
So this isn't about the hype. These guys are IRS people. They're frankly boring, right? there's not a lot of excitement over at the IRS. They're not trying to be exciting. They're not trying to be flashy here. They're just, people who work for the government, care about what goes on there, and actually don't want corruption to run wild. And I will say, a lot of times, we are guilty of this at times. I think right now we're kind of doing it at times with the FBI and the CIA and some of these organizations that have been really irresponsible lately. We tend to look at the leadership and tend to look at the culture that often does not operate seemingly legally at all, or certainly within the bounds of good taste. And we kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have to remember that there are really good people in all these organizations, and many of them have come out and said, hey, I got a problem with this. You need to know about this. I'm going to be a whistleblower on some of these big issues. There are people who really care. People who work at the IRS, they're not all evil, although I think their jobs are evil, typically, at the IRS. I wish the organization didn't exist at all. But I will say, of course, someone who's sitting there and saying, wait a minute, this is totally different treatment than we give everybody else. This is a problem. I'm going to call it out. That's brave. They're going to get death threats. They're going to get beat up. They're probably never going to get another promotion, at least during this administration. So it is important and it is brave work. And now, one of the things we've talked about, which has been most fascinating to me, is the Hunter Biden thing goes through this entire period where we hear so many different things. We look at the laptop, we see all these different messages, all these texts, all these unfortunate photos, all of this going on. And the day after Hunter Biden cuts a deal to basically get off from all of this, we then, the next day, get these WhatsApp messages where Hunter Biden is saying, hey, I'm in the room with my dad. He's going to be pissed at you if you don't come through with this payment. How does that happen the day after? It's been really frustrating. Well, we now know from these whistleblowers that they weren't even really able to pursue the WhatsApp messages.
With respect to the WhatsApp messages, it was something we clearly needed to follow up on. And that was really one of the major deviations in this case, is that investigators asked, and Special Agent Ziegler asked to follow, to take some investigative steps to review that. And it just simply wasn't supported by the prosecutor. So further delving into what that means, I just simply can't do.
I can. And I can tell you that this certainly seems like they were blocking the whatever controversy came from this. This wasn't even all the Biden era DOJ. Some of this happened during the Trump era as well. And it seems like agents on both sides of that said, look, this is too much hassle. Either it's too much of a problem, too much of a political problem, or we're just straight out defending our guy when it comes to the Biden administration. We don't know how much of that each ingredient it is at this point. But we do know from these whistleblowers that it wasn't just that these investigations were going on but being blocked. Also, somehow, the Bidens kept getting tipped off over and over and over again when questions were about to be asked. Listen.
The FBI, SSA, and I were assigned with interviewing Hunter Biden that day. And the day previous, we went to the LA FBI field office and asked them to the special agent in charge to contact the Secret Service special agent in charge from the LA field office at 8 a.m. on the morning of December 8th and tell them that two agents were going to approach Hunter Biden to as part of an official investigation. And the night before, all of that changed.
And all of that changed because FBI headquarters and Secret Service headquarters coordinated, and that information had gotten out to everybody the night before. And we can talk about whether it's a highly political investigation and all of those different things, but there's another group of people that was made aware of that the night before, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's correct.
And that would be the transition team.
That's correct.
And the transition team is a political operation set up to help the president-elect vet cabinet employees, work on inauguration, do all of those things. I mean, is that your understanding?
Generally, yes.
They have any special investigative powers I don't know about?
Not that I would know of.
In your entire history and working in history with the IRS, you ever worked with a transition team of a president to help set up an interview with a subject of a criminal investigation?
I have not.
Last question. Did you ever get to interview Hunter Biden?
We did not interview him.
I mean, that was maybe the most bonkers moment of this entire thing. We've heard rumors of this. We didn't think that it actually happened, but to hear it confirmed that in the middle of this entire investigation, they never even talked to Hunter Biden. What the hell kind of investigation is that? I mean, you get a speeding ticket, you get talked to about it. Every investigation has a conversation, you'd think, with the principal. And yet they didn't even bother to ask any questions about any of this stuff. Over and over and over again, we keep seeing this same thing where there's walls put up, people being told, don't go down that road. Hey, it's no big deal. Let's not get any hassle. And we don't want the political heat that's coming from this. It's the exact opposite of what these organizations are supposed to be. And we even see politics getting in the way of the investigation, as Shapley talked about.
The Justice Department allowed the president's political appointees to weigh in on whether to charge the president's son. After United States Attorney for D.C. Matthew Graves, appointed by President Biden, refused to bring charges in March 2022, I watched United States Attorney Weiss tell a room full of senior FBI and IRS senior leaders on October 7, 2022, that he was not the deciding person on whether charges were filed. That was my red line.
I mean, that's what everyone's red line should be, right? I mean, that pushed him over, but it is, there's so many other red lines that have been crossed as well. And this is interesting because Weiss, of course, was appointed by Trump, and Trump put him in charge thinking he'd do a good job. But, you know, if you are saying that you are not in charge of who gets in trouble for something like this, who is? I mean, I think everyone thinks it's Merrick Garland. And you know, there's major, major questions to be asked about him as well. Now, the other whistleblower is Ziegler. This is the guy we hadn't really heard of before. We've seen interviews with Shapley previously. Ziegler, not as much. And to understand, again, who this guy is, it's important to understand this is not some Republican operative. This is not some hardcore conservative who just has it out for Joe Biden. Listen to him describe who he is.
I've recently discovered that people are saying that I must be more credible because I'm a Democrat who happens to be married to a man. I'm no more credible than this man sitting next to me due to my sexual orientation or my political beliefs. The truth is, my credibility comes today from my job experience with the IRS and my intimate knowledge of the agency's standard and procedures. I was raised and have always strived to do what is right. Although I do have my supporters, others have said that I am a traitor to the Democratic Party and that I am causing more division in our society. I implore you to consider that if you were in my position with the facts as I have stated them, ask yourself if you would be doing the exact same thing. I hope that I am an example to other LGBTQ people out there who are questioning doing the right thing at the potential cost of themselves and others.
Guy's a Democrat. He is, as he said, part of the LGBTQ community. And he doesn't mind standing up and doing what's right because, of course, for him, it's not about politics. For so many others, it is centrally about politics. And Ziegler went into to describe about how investigators or just terrified, right? Terrified of this process, terrified of bringing these things up, terrified of bringing questions into their, not only to the people in the public, but also just to people behind the scenes. And they're not trying to publicize this initially. They're going behind the scenes. They're trying to bring these things up. And over again, they're getting slapped down. So eventually you have to become a whistleblower. You know, as I always say, I'm always skeptical of whistleblowers. I'm not a big whistleblower guy, especially if you just go directly to the public. These guys, though, they tried to handle this all privately. They tried to deal with all this privately, and over again, they were overruled. Here he is asking about why people couldn't just ask questions.
There was an environment when we were interviewing witnesses where you were afraid to ask questions, questions that could lead to the presidential campaign. And this is after the campaign's over. So questions like that, it was restricted, and so things like that, we were limited to talking about.
You think this would be leading the news if the roles were reversed? Like, you think if Democrats found a couple of whistleblowers who came out and said, hey, you know, the Trump DOJ is blocking us when we're trying to do our investigations. I mean, we saw some of that during the Trump administration when there was a whistleblower. It dominated the news every single day. They don't care about this at all, though. Now, I will say a couple organizations have done that. CBS News, we'll get to them here in a couple of minutes. There's been some media interest in this, but not that much. Here is Ziegler now talking about other ways that the investigation was slowed down and at times stopped.
I will also note that while the impression has been conveyed by the U.S. attorney in Delaware that he has similar powers to that of a special counsel in this case, free rein to do as needed, that was not the case. It appeared to me, based on what I experienced, that the U.S. attorney in Delaware in our investigation was constantly hamstrung, limited, and marginalized by DOJ officials as well as other U.S. attorneys. I still think that a special counsel is necessary for this investigation.
Yes, you are 100% right. At the very least, that needs to happen. Now, Ziegler also talked to CBS. I mentioned that CBS actually gave some airtime to this. This is the second or third time they've done something like this. And you know, look, they deserve some credit. We bash the mainstream media all the time, and they deserve it almost all the time. But in reality, here in this situation, at least they're talking about this and bringing this to people's attention. They're one of the only organizations who are doing it, though, I will say. Here is Ziegler on CBS.
Did you uncover evidence that President Biden financially benefited from his son's deals?
I don't feel comfortable answering that question.
Why is that?
Anytime we potentially wanted to go down the road of asking questions related to the president, that's going to take too much approvals. We can't ask those questions. And I mean, it created an environment that was very hard to deal with.
It's a politically sensitive case. Wouldn't it require additional approvals?
Yes, I do understand that aspect, but it would be like, well, let's think about it. Let's put that on the back burner.
I mean, that's normal human behavior, right? Like in a big story, a big case like this, you're going to understand that maybe there's going to be some hesitation to just go down this road. But when you have someone who obviously is not politically motivated here, you'd see maybe this stuff should go forward. Maybe these questions should be asked. Maybe we should actually get the answers that we're trying to get here from the principals in this case. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you should at least talk to Hunter Biden. Maybe have a conversation with Hunter Biden about this. Maybe talk to Joe Biden about this. Maybe talk to the aides around them. Maybe find out from some of these Chinese officials that we're talking about. Bring them in. I mean, is this not a big enough story for you, really? Corruption at the highest levels of our government, that's not big enough for you anymore? I mean, I know there's a lot going on. I mean, what did the Kardashians do today? I don't know. I'm sure there are real questions that you're really trying to solve with whatever, butt implant Kim just got installed. But can we instead maybe ask important questions about this? Can we find out what the deal is? Because we're at a situation now where we might be a little bit different than legal standards, right? As conservative commentators, I want Joe Biden to be held accountable for this stuff. And I see all this evidence and I'm like, this guy's obviously guilty. But these questions, at the very least, should be asked. They should be put on record. Every time Hunter Biden walks by anybody, a reporter, he should be constantly harangued about that WhatsApp question. He has not answered one question about the WhatsApp message. How is that possible? Do you think Donald Trump Jr. would already be stalked by reporters and have answered a question about that? Of course they would.
This is all the media would be talking about until these questions were answered. And now our media is just like falling asleep for the most part. It is shameful. And look, you know, look, that 1 to 10 scale I started this with 1 being nothing and 10 being, you know, Joe Biden gets impeached and goes to prison. I think I'm up to a 3 or 4 here. There is definitely something going on. We know money was moved. Millions of dollars in this case were moved to the Bidens from corrupt companies outside of this country. We know that Hunter Biden, at the very least, was using his dad's name, at the very least, to try to manipulate other people into giving him money. If that's the case, if that's what happened, Hunter Biden should be nowhere near state dinners. And the president of the United States should have to denounce his actions. And then we'll move this investigation farther, because I don't believe for a second he didn't know. We know they talked about this stuff. We know Hunter Biden was utilizing his father to get more money. What we don't yet know is how well this all ties together in a nice legal bow. But man, if we had journalists who actually cared about the truth, we'd know already. And I hope some of them wake up and realize their job is not to protect Joe Biden. That's not your gig. Your gig is to inform the American people, and we need to know. Genucel is the best in skincare, and they have extended your chance to get their most popular package featuring beautifully curated skincare essentials for life outside in the summer sun. Now, Genucel's limited time summer essentials package includes their one-of-a-kind ultra retinol super moisturizer with a powerful plant extract. Now, this is something that's really, it's like a retinol alternative that can deliver the results that you want without the harsh side effects, and it's perfectly safe to use in the summer sun. Right now, you can get Genucel's classic skincare therapy for under-eye bags and puffiness that will get you compliments wherever you go. I know I've got family members who bought this, friends who have bought this. We've been giving it as gifts. This is awesome. Results are guaranteed, so check that out as well. There's no risk here. Genucel.com/stew makes a great gift. You can get your Genucel Summer Essentials package right now for over 65% off. And just for the summer, every subscription order includes a customized summer spa gift box, absolutely free. For one more week, every Summer Essentials package includes their nourishing vitamin C serum for a visibly clear complexion. Don't wait. Go to genucel.com/stew, genucel.com/stew. It's genucel.com/stew.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
I want to bring in Justin Haskins. He is the co-author of Dark Future, along with our own Glenn Beck, uncovering the Great Reset's terrifying next phase. And the book, of course, is the number 2 selling book in America. Congratulations, Justin, for that. Although pretty stupid to release it against a K-pop book.
We're coming for you, K-pop. The whole industry, we're coming for you.
Is that part of the, I will say, that could easily be part of a dark future. The more K-pop we get, I just don't understand it.
Well, you know, it's either that, I think you're right. I think we may want to lean into this, actually. And I'm trying to convince Glenn to do the next book entirely on K-pop. but so far, I haven't been able to convince him yet. He didn't even know what it was until this morning, I think.
Yeah.
So.
He was like, oh, what is this, BTS? And I'm like, look, I don't know anything about BTS either, but I do know the name. And I do know it's pretty much of a cultural phenomenon of some sort. So I'm not surprised, I suppose, that you finished behind them. Of course, the New York Times said you finished behind them and every other book that's ever been released, apparently. Number 12, is that right, on the New York Times?
Number 12. What's amazing about this is that the last book that Glenn and I did together, The Great Reset, was far and away number one. No one was even remotely close to it. This is pre-K-pop being number one.
Yeah.
And the New York Times listed us as number 12 that time on the first week as well. So this is clearly their slot to just put in all of the books that they don't like the first week they come out. They just slide them right into number 12. So we were number 12 now two times in a row, even though we were much better off. But what can you do? Yeah. I mean, that's what you expect.
It's
right?
Amazing because, you know, back in the day, I remember when we first started releasing books, and it's always been a tilted list. Like, this is not a new observation from conservatives who whine about the New York Times list. I mean, I always cared about BookScan. BookScan is the one that actually tells you the actual numbers of copies sold. But, you know, New York Times, you know, has some prestige, or at least used to. And it was always tilted. But I remember, like, this happened when we were going up. I think it was against a Stephen Colbert book. It was one of the first. I think it was Glenn's first number one bestseller. And it came out, and, like, we were ahead of the Colbert book as far as sales went. But it was close. Like, you know, it was a few thousand copies. And they put Colbert above us, and we were number two. And I was like, ah, this is so annoying. They have completely abandoned caring about book sales. Like, this list is just, here are the books that we like. And this one, Glenn Beck, we don't like, so he's going to be number 12. They've abandoned even any factual basis for this list.
Yeah, yeah. It's so. What makes it so frustrating is it's not even remotely close. Like the gap between us and the number two book, where we should have been, is like we were twice as much as that book. I think we sold three times as much as the book that they put at number three. And somehow we end up at 12. We can't even crack the top 10 anymore, which I don't. It's like, can you at least throw me number nine? Can you at least give me that? No, I can't even get that out of him. It's crazy.
It's just infuriating. But anyway, congratulations on actually selling lot of books. I want to talk about a little bit more about the actual book here, because one of the things as I've been going through it is interesting in that the dark future that is proposed in this book is not actually sort of proposed by these elite forces. They're not saying, like, hey, we have some good ideas here and here's how we think we can improve things. The way it's presented often is that it's this natural evolution of humanity. And whether you like this idea or you don't, it's coming because you can't stop it. It is a foregone conclusion that this dark future, they don't call it a dark future. I'm calling it a dark future. Glenn's calling it a dark future. You are. But they don't call it that. But they do say that it's basically inevitable. And I don't know, that adds to the creepiness factor quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, really, Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, a guy we've talked about a lot with the Great Reset and ESG and all of this, he's one of the masterminds behind this. And he's a futurist. He likes technology. He spends a lot of time talking about it, thinking about it. He's been writing about it for many, many years. He is a futurist, and he believes, kind of like Glenn, who's been a futurist for a long time as well, that a lot of these changes are going to happen, that artificial intelligence is going to change a lot, that quantum computing and advancements in supercomputers, that's going to change a lot. The 5G and eventually 6G technology and all these other things, central bank digital currencies, all this stuff is going to change the world. The question is how. And that's really the difference. It's not so much that I think that these technologies or Glenn, it's not that we think that these technologies are, you know, some devious plan in and of themselves. It's that the World Economic Forum, the Biden administration, and people like that want to twist the technology and design it and make sure that the whatever comes out of this fourth industrial revolution that's emerging is slanted in their favor and is transforming society in the way that they want to see it transform. That's really what this book is all about, is showing you the game plan for transforming society through these new technologies. It's not really showing that they're trying to build these supercomputers for this specific purpose. It's more like they see the technology coming and they want to design it to make sure that it gives them the outcome that they're looking for.
And this is a smart tactic, right? Like, I mean, this is it's not stupid. These people are not stupid. They're looking at this and they're saying, we want to protect the power that we have. We want to expand it in the future. And this is how we're going to go about that. Talk a little bit, about the second wave of human evolution. And this is kind of how I got here, because you get to that point of thinking of, they look at evolution as this thing that happened and it was going to happen anyway, and humans would progress through this this whole path. And they see this as a whole new idea, this whole second wave of evolution for humans that's going to happen. It's a foregone conclusion, and they want to put their finger on the scale.
Yeah. So the fourth industrial revolution, this idea of this being the fourth industrial revolution, what really differentiates this industrial revolution in their minds from the third industrial revolution, which is the information age, the creation of the internet, really all of the modern technologies that we think of as being modern today. That's the third industrial revolution. The difference between the third and the fourth industrial revolution is the interconnectedness between these technologies and people. And what virtually every futurist that I read, that I talked to, that I watched speeches, people giving speeches, from Klaus Schwab to libertarians, it didn't matter. Even Glenn Beck, you know, people like that who've been talking about this for a long time, they all have the same opinion of what's going to happen in the very near future. And that is that our technology is going to increasingly become more connected to people in some cases, very physical way. We're actually going to be connecting ourselves into the metaverse in some fashion. We're going to have not just wearable technology, but perhaps even implantable technology. That these are the kinds of things that Davos is expecting will happen. And so the question is, how can they use those technologies? How can they make sure that if our world is existing on the internet more and more and more, or in these digital spaces through the metaverse, or through a variety of other formats, even something that we might, like I said, implant into our bodies, which sounds crazy, but virtually every futurist in the world thinks that that's coming. What does that world look like? And they're trying as hard as they can to make sure that the rules for those things are a certain way. And so that the outcome of that technology is more, they say it'll be more equitable and diverse and inclusive and all of this. But when you actually read the details, you realize it's just, let's centralize more power and control in the hands of the ruling class elites, right? But it is creepy just in and of itself, regardless of how that technology is going to be designed. When I first came into all of this, I was really skeptical of that kind of thing. I just didn't think people would ever want to sign up for it.
Yeah.
But I got to be honest with you, after watching enough of these presentations and speeches and reading these books and stuff, I kind of can see where they're coming from. I actually think it is entirely possible that maybe not in the next 10 years, but maybe in the next 20 or 30 or 40, you will have people connecting themselves with devices in a much more intimate way, maybe not plugged into their brain or something, but in a more intimate way than they do now, simply because the advantages to that are just going to be so incredible that if you don't do it, you'll basically be like the Amish, and nobody's going to want to be that. If you want to survive in the modern world, you're going to have to do it, I think.
You're leading me to this, to my last question, which basically was like, is there any chance that we resist this stuff? And this is how I got there today. You know, you mentioned you're going to be intimately connected. I saw a story about AI and how now the people are using AI to create essentially Instagram influencers that are not real. And so they're basically creating these perfect looking women who are going to these incredible locations in bathing suits, just like real Instagram influencers, except they don't have to find the people. The people don't have to watch their diet. They don't have to go to the gym every single day. They just look amazing just by a couple of words being typed in. And as I'm looking at this, apparently you can make AI women look very, very good. They're very good looking. And it's like, there's no way the American people are going to resist this. They're going to see this as perfect and with no work, and they're all just going to fall in love with it. Is there any way, we got about 1 minute, is there any way we can resist this?
I mean, I think that's an open question. I think what we know for sure is that whatever technologies are coming, and however connected we are to them, we need to make sure that embedded at their foundation, designed into their programming, is the sort of mainstay American traditional values that we all think are really important. Personal liberty, personal responsibility, equality under the law, basically the Bill of Rights. And if we don't do that, then there's no chance this is going to work out well. There's zero chance. Whatever chance there is with all those things designed the right way, it's probably not great. But it's terrible if Davos is the one designing it. So we have to make sure that freedom is at the center of all of this stuff. And right now, that's not happening. So that's why we wrote this book, and that's why we need people to read it.
Yeah, that's the opportunity, right? Wake up right now. Try to push this stuff through. The book is called Dark Future: Uncovering the Great Reset's Terrifying Next Phase. It's the number two book in America, and also in the New York Times, number 845. Congratulations to Justin Haskins and, of course, Glenn Beck. It's a great book, and you should definitely check it out. Get it wherever you get your books. Justin, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Stu.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
A lot of people bash polls. Here, we like to learn from them. And what polls do is they tell you something general. They tell you generalities pretty well. They tell you specifics pretty poorly sometimes. They're not exact. They don't tell you the exact final score, but they can give you a general sense of the game. And that is really important. Now, of course, national polls are less important than state polls when you're talking about a primary, especially. And honestly, before, let's say now, there's not that much value. You get a general sense. Look, we all know Donald Trump is in first place. We all know Ron DeSantis is in second place. We all know there's a muddle below that for the rest of the field. But we're now starting to get a sense from these early states, some polls, where we can get a sense of where those states stand. Now, of course, Iowa is going to kick the thing off. We're going to go to New Hampshire as a second state. We have a brand new poll from New Hampshire today. And Donald Trump, of course, does lead, as you would probably guess, 37% of the vote for Donald Trump. Ron DeSantis, as you would probably guess, is in second, 23% of the vote. Tim Scott is in third in New Hampshire at 8%. Chris Christie and Doug Burgum. Yes, Doug Burgum, the North Dakota governor who's been buying people, are giving them gift cards for donations in this weird scheme where he takes in a $1 donation and gives people a $20 gift card just to get them on the rolls because you need 40,000 individual donors to get on stage at the debate. Doug Burgum at 6%, which is by far the best poll I've seen him with. Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley at 5%. And then Mike Pence at 1, Will Hurd at 1, Asa Hutchinson, Francis Suarez at 0, and anybody else you can think of also at basically 0. I think there's 1%. Maybe Larry Elder has 1. I don't know why they wouldn't include him in that, but that's how this looks. Now, let me give you the change, the way this has looked, the change in the polls. And you can kind of see that, you know, go back to the beginning of 2021, Trump had a huge lead. That narrowed right around the election. And after the election, where Ron DeSantis took the lead for a little bit and then gave it back in April of this year, that has been right around flat since then. Donald Trump came back a little bit to the pack in this particular poll. 14-point poll, honestly, for Ron DeSantis right now is probably good news. He's been down by 20 and 30 in some of these polls, especially nationally. He's been facing a larger deficit than that. A 14-point swing is not that big of a deal at all, honestly, at this point, without, you know, before debates and everything else go on. So it's pretty good news for Ron DeSantis in that poll. If you look a little bit deeper in the poll, you can find some other interesting nuggets here in that second choice. This is interesting because, let's say you're a Donald Trump person, who's your second choice if that person goes away? The number one, as far as second choice goes, is Ron DeSantis and Vivek Ramaswamy, both tied at 18%. Tim Scott showing up again there at 12%. Scott looks pretty good. This is a good poll for Tim Scott in New Hampshire. Mike Pence is at 11%. Really a bad poll for him because he was only at 1% in the poll, but he's showing that some people are like, all right, if I don't get my top person, maybe I will go to someone like Pence. Larry Elder is at 5%, which is, I would say, an encouraging number for Elder, who really doesn't get talked about all that much. Though, again, Larry Elder is a good communicator. He would be another guy who would do well on a debate stage. Then you got Haley, Burgum, Christie, and everybody else after that. The next biggest one is who are you definitely not going to vote for? And this is an important question because It shows you have growth up to this point, typically. If people are saying, I'm definitely not going to vote for you, those people are typically lost, obviously. Not always, I will say. People have a way of changing their mind late on. But by far, the overwhelming leader in this one is Chris Christie. 35%, and I mean, basically doubling everybody else. 35% of the voters saying, there's no way I'm voting for Chris Christie. Mike Pence is second on that list. You want to be top on this list. 20% for Mike Pence. Donald Trump at 18%. This is going to be a little against the grain, but I think that's actually a good number for Donald Trump. You know, people have really strong opinions about Donald Trump. And if the quote unquote never Trump contingency in New Hampshire is only 18%, that's actually not a bad number for him. Ron DeSantis gets a great number here, though. Only 4% said they would not vote for Ron DeSantis. That's very good. And you go down for the rest of people like Nikki Haley. This is the path for Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Tim Scott, these types of guys who really have no opposition. There's almost no contingency at all for people who just like, I will never vote for Nikki Haley under any circumstances. And that points to someone who might be tenable as a candidate for VP, right? Someone who doesn't have a lot of passion, but not a lot against them as well. You'd see it someone like Mike Pence or Chris Christie would not be the someone you'd point to in that particular case, at least in New Hampshire. Now, of course, Iowa has a way of changing New Hampshire, right? Maybe not all the way, but if you're running big in Iowa, you win big in Iowa, you get the momentum there. Maybe you can turn that into an advantage as well in New Hampshire. You have to look at this race and say, couple of things. Number one, Donald Trump is the overwhelming favorite. I've been telling you that from long before. Even when Ron DeSantis was leading in some polls, I still said Donald Trump is the overwhelming favorite. Why? Look, he's the most famous person in the world. He's got a floor of probably 30 or 35% in most of these states. So he has a very narrow window to defeat him. It's a large field. It's going to get broken up in a bunch of ways. And there's a lot of people who are really loyal to Donald Trump and just aren't going to go away from him no matter what you say. But there is a path, and I don't think people like DeSantis or Scott or anybody else in this field should say, I'm done. Nothing can happen in this race. I'm just going to hand it to Donald Trump. That's not the state that we're in. These polls don't show that, especially in these early states. These polls don't really show that this is a one-man race. This is tier one has one guy in it, and that's Donald Trump. Tier two has one guy in it. That's Ron DeSantis. And then there's a bunch of other people trying to be that third person right now. Maybe it's Vivek Ramaswamy. Maybe it's Tim Scott. Maybe it's Nikki Haley or one of these other candidates. But there's still a long time to go. And we'll say this, though. I've been saying for a while, there's a long time to go. Still early. It's not really early anymore. The first debate's in a few weeks. We are in the middle of this. This is happening. Red alert, boys and girls. This is actually going to happen. We are in an election, and now we just have to hold our breath in terror for the next 18 months. We spend a lot of time covering companies that have gone awry. Obviously, Bud Light was the big example recently. Disney. Oh, we've got, what is going on with Snow White? It's a bizarre, bizarre story. But we don't spend a lot of time, maybe not enough time, talking about companies that actually do like this country, that actually do love this country, that actually don't hate you. Grip 6 is a great company like that. They're from Utah. They sell in the United States, but their products are kind of in demand all around the world. But they source almost everything they use to make their products right here in America. They have belts that are minimalist, so they're not sort of jutting out of your shirt. They're all customizable. You can do laser-etched designs, logos, flags, all sorts of cool stuff on your belt buckle to make it personal. They're also available in carbon fiber, so you're not setting off the metal detectors at the airport. They have really cool wallets as well, socks too. You're going to love their stuff, and they're going to love you too, because they love you, they love this country. They're Grip 6, grip6.com/stu. Use the code STU and save 15%. Why not? Why would you want to save the 15%? You might as well. Use the code STU, save yourself 15%. grip6.com/stu, grip6.com/stu. Get 15% off today.
Well, as you all know, today is National Hot Dog Day, and perhaps you also know that hot dog is my favorite meat. I love hot dogs. I love them in buns. I love them outside of buns. Okay. I love them with baked beans. I just like hot dogs. It's the best meat there is, without question.
Is it?
So to all of you who, like me, are celebrating National Hot Dog Day, congratulations to you, and may there be many, many more hot dogs served in our wonderful land.
I have so many questions. First of all, who made him do this? Secondly, what do you mean hot dogs are your favorite meat inside your buns? What are you talking about? That's not something you should say. Number three, is that even a real video? I feel like it has to be AI. We were just talking about AI. Maybe someone just produce the worst possible Mitt Romney video, and that just what AI spit out. I think that's possible. But let me give you the most important thing about that video. Right now is the time we need someone to step up and take out Mitt Romney in a primary election. We need someone. Is it Sean Reyes? I would think that would be a good one. Somebody needs to step up because this opportunity to take him out as a Republican candidate is going to fade away very quickly. So please, somebody, step up. Head over to StuDoesMerch.com for your Anyone But Joe Biden in 2024 merch. It's available now. Use the code STU10 and save yourself 10%. It's StuDoesMerch.com. We'll see you tomorrow.